Hey, everyone, and thanks for tuning in to this week's message. My name's Aaron, and I'm on the staff team here at Eastlake. Everything we do around here depends on the generous donations of our local and online community, people just like you, who tune into these messages and see great benefit from living that idea that life is a gift and love is the point. So if you love what Eastlake is up to, we'd encourage you to contribute by going to eastlakecc.com. With that, let's jump into this week's message.
Today we're jumping into the series we've been in. It's called Enneagram Series, and we've actually been in it for a couple weeks now. It's our fourth week, and we're focusing on the third type, Enneagram 3. And if you don't have any context on Enneagram, the Enneagram is a typing tool, and so if you don't know what your number is and you don't have any background, there's a couple great resources that we want to point you towards. You can take a test, so if you follow our newsletter, you can take the Enneagram test to know what your type is, and then Chris Hewitt's book called The Sacred Enneagram is a great starter to just kind of understand what the Enneagram is. But the point of the Enneagram is to help learn more about ourselves, our type, our motivation, so that hopefully we can kind of deal with some of the inner yuckiness and live as a beneficial presence in the world. And so we started off with Chris Hewitt, who kind of gave an overview, and then we did Enneagram 1 and 2. Today is the Enneagram 3. I'm not sure how Gary's going to share on it, the achiever, the person really focused on success. I feel like I know this type pretty well because that's what I'm at. So anyways, I'm excited to have Gary read my mail today. Gary Hale is an Eastlaker. He's been around forever. He was employed at Eastlake 2007 to 2009. Gary and Lindsay and he still attends even after having been employed by the organization, which that's crazy. But Gary and Lindsay and their fam have been Eastlakers for a really long time. We're excited to hear him share. I don't think there's a person in the room with more Eastlake baggage than Gary. I mean, think about that. Since 2007, that's a lot of baggage to build up. So anyways, Gary, would you come on up here and excited to have you share. Would you welcome Gary?
I'm on here. Well, what an intro that was. That was great. It is true, there is a lot of baggage, so I'll work through some of that today with all of you. It'll be fantastic. But again, yes, my name's Gary, and I'm excited to be able to share about the Enneagram 3. Like Peter said, the performer, the achiever, the one whose most dominant drive is this need to succeed. And as Ryan and I were kind of talking about the series, and he pitched this idea of me sharing on this one, I just got really excited about the series in general because I've been sort of into the Enneagram, and you sort of fall in two camps. Like, you're either an Enneagram nut and you dive deep into the whole thing, or you're somebody who's like, I think stupid, which you're probably an Enneagram 4. You'll find about that next week, by the way. But I leaned onto the whole nut side and really dove in a couple years ago. But I love this because it's like this framework or this tool to help you discover who your true self is. And I know for me, it's been this like hugely beneficial thing for me to understand what makes me tick, what are my motivations, what are my needs, what does that look like in the world? And I think for so many people, it's been a way for you to understand your sense of identity and place in the world. Maybe some of the roles or the masks that you wear or that I wear to cover our true selves and cover some of our pain. And then ultimately, it gives you this unique path forward into human wholeness based on your type. And so really excited to be able to share. And I think even more than that, the way I like to think about the Enneagram is it's like this human empathy tool that as you sort of start to understand these nine types, that maybe it opens you up to the experience of others, that you might be able to empathize with the way someone's experience is different than yours. It might lead us to compassion and cooperation and participating in one another's healing. And it can be such a powerful tool for that. And so if you missed weeks 1 and 2, going into those, I encourage you to go back and watch and listen. But before I jump into the specifics of the three, I do want to give a little bit more history to unpack some of what Peter was saying. But I've been in a relationship with this community for like so long. So I was thinking about it as I was prepping. And I found this community in 2004. Like, yes, it existed then. So that was 16 years ago. And so nearly half of my life, I've been in some kind of relationship with this community. And if you've been around for any number of years, you know, it's been a pretty wild journey and a wild ride. But it's kind of mind-boggling for me to reflect on because this community has really shaped so much of my growing up experience in this world. And so it's been a really powerful place for me. I've had a lot of firsts here. I was the first ever intern back in the day. We had a different name for it back then. I just shouldn't say it publicly. I was the first ever youth pastor here in this community. I met my wife, Lindsay, here, and then we left for a number of years, and I was a youth pastor for a long time. Ultimately went to go start my own church, which I'll talk a little bit about today. But came back a couple years ago. And so, as you know, there's been so many twists and turns along the way in this journey, mountaintops and valleys, and it's been just an unbelievable community to be a part of. And as someone who has traveled this road of kind of deconstructive and then reconstructing a new spirituality that is maybe a little bit more open and inclusive of other journeys, Eastlake's really played a huge role of that for me. And so let me show you a picture of my family here. There we are. That's Lindsay and our two boys, Jad and Kai. They're 7 and 5. And we spent our entire relationship, we've been married for 11 years this year. Got that right. Can't mess that one up. But we've spent our entire relationship as pastors in the Evangelical Christian Church up until just like a year and a half ago. But most notably, we started a church in the Bay Area. We moved from Seattle area down to San Francisco and started a church with the Southern Baptist Convention, which if you don't know much about them, they're not the most progressive bunch in the world. It's the nice way to say it. But we followed a very similar path as Eastlake, this inclusion journey, as we were sort of confronted with some of the exclusive ways that we looked at humanity and people's expression of what that looks like. So specifically for our LGBTQIA plus community, we followed that path of saying we want to be a place of equal participation, opportunity for our neighbors in that kind of a way. And so it was picked up in this article a couple years ago by Sojourners. What transpired for this was not surprising, because again, like I said, Southern Baptist Convention, they're not progressive, like very conservative in the way they view the world. So the short version of the story is that we ended up starting this faith community. We made this transition as it related to our policies and our beliefs for inclusion. We were removed from the denomination and lost all 25 backing financial partners that were helping us really sustain as this brand new baby community. And so ultimately, 3 years after we started, we ended up closing the church in 2017. I think there's two important things I want to say about that particular experience. Number one is, my God, were we late to the conversation of like inclusion and human sexuality. Like, it's embarrassing to think that it was like 2016, 2017. Like, I have so much shame about it, but the reality is it's something that's so obvious now just wasn't obvious then. And number two, I think oftentimes people really want to celebrate Lindsay and I in our community of what we did. Like, wow, I can't believe you made such a bold, courageous move, like so amazing. You must have lost so much. And while all those things are so true and I appreciate that sentiment, I think what I hope is that we don't forget that this conversation, it's ongoing, that there's still work to be done, that there are still people who are discriminated against and marginalized based on their sexuality. And let's not lose sight of that in moments like this. And so I just want to point that out. Moving kind of forward in my journey, as my religious worldview expanded beyond Christianity and I started to be open to including other worldviews and religions and paths to truth, I realized that I could no longer be an evangelical Christian pastor anymore. It sort of didn't work out because I was no longer trying to convert everybody to my way of being, and that doesn't really work in that context. So I left being a pastor a year and a half ago. Now I get to work at Microsoft. I am a diversity inclusion program manager. So I get to sort of take my experience that I come from and sort of place that into a new context and trying to help create great spaces for people. So that was a lot of history and probably too much. But the reason I wanted to share all of that is this whole journey inward and eventually to the Enneagram is so deeply embedded in my personal journey of spirituality, of growing up, of opening up, of expanding and including and including more than what I was told I was allowed to include. And one of the little one-liner ways I used to like to share my story was, I started a church and I lost my faith. But now I really like to think about it as, I started a church, I lost my faith, and I began to find myself. And it's this ongoing journey, which I'll share more about today. But anyways, all that to say, my name's Gary, and you're really here to hear about the Enneagram 3, and so let's just go right into that. So again, it's the performer, the achiever, the need to succeed. So how does that manifest itself in the world? And so real quick, just where are my Enneagram 3s? Can I kind of see? Yeah, you're excited about your threeness. I know how that goes. Like, we tend to be a little bit of a proud bunch, and threes, I know a few things about you. Number one is you look around at all the rest of the people that aren't threes and that are different numbers on the Enneagram, and you think, I'm the best one. Like, I'm the one that gets some stuff done around here. Like, all y'all are kind of lazy. You don't do very much. And so I get it. I understand. The second thing I know about you is that you're really here as a three because you kind of want to compare yourself to the other threes to see where you level up, right? It's like you're trying to discover, like, all right, who's the most successful? And I know this too, like, you believe you are the most successful no matter what, and that's just the way it's gonna be. That's okay, no judgment, safe space for you to be here today. For non-threes, if you know a three and have like some kind of an intimate relationship or friendship, can you think of that person? Okay, really, what do you really think about us? Like, be honest, it's okay. I know you're really annoyed by our ambition and our goal setting and our energy to be able to do more and achieve more. It's fine. And maybe you can relate to this. I got a message from somebody in this community a couple days ago because they found out that I was speaking on the three. And so they were talking to their partner, and their partner said, I'm looking forward to Sunday because every three I know is an ambitious jerk. And Gary isn't a jerk, yes. So maybe he can redeem it. And my lens for the three there is all I see is maybe that you really don't believe that I can pull this off, so I'm gonna prove it to you because I'm competitive and I'm successful and I'm gonna show you that I can make that happen. For those of you that are not a three, not most dominant as a three, just keep the threes in your life in mind as I share today because I think it will help you empathize with our experience. And ultimately, I promise you, you're going to feel very sad for us by the end of today, okay? So just calling that out now. But let's just talk. Overview, characteristics of a three. Chris Hewitt in his book, Sacred Enneagram, he kind of lays it out. Some of the key features of what the three, how the three is wired and what this looks like. So just to point out a few of them. Our virtue is truthfulness and authenticity. Like at our best, the three sort of lets go of the shimmer and shine, the competitiveness, and we become more real and authentic and patient. Our basic desire is to feel valuable. Our fear is that we are worthless without our achievements and our success. Fixation is vanity, passion is deceit. Sorry about that one. Our direction of integration, or as I said, when you're living in stress, of integration is you're living in health, we take on some of the aspects of the six, which is the loyalist. So we become a little bit warmer. We're less focused on ourselves and we are less competitive. Maybe we're more people focused rather than project focused. And then in disintegration, living in stress as it relates to the Enneagram, we take on some of the features of the nine, which is the peacemaker, where we can sort of numb out or we disengage so that we don't have to really feel anything or have to go to any places of depth as a way to sort of protect ourselves. The thing about threes is we're very driven. You get a bunch of threes in a room and we're gonna come up with all the ideas of how we're gonna change the world. We're gonna set the goals and the metrics of the way that we're gonna like make this world a better place. It's gonna be unbelievable. We are extremely productive. You might think of a three and think to yourself, I have no idea how they get so much done. And it's true, we get a lot done. And you should thank us for this. Our tendency is to have multiple plates sort of spinning, projects that we're dreaming of achieving, or we're actually like, we're going after them. We're doing all of these different things, trying to accomplish more. We can be natural born leaders. We can often find ourselves moving up the ladder to these positions of great power and position, privilege and responsibility. We can come off as a little cocky. Yes, agreed with me there in the front row. It's fine. A little overly confident, maybe too self-assured, and that can be off-putting for some people. But truthfully, underneath that sort of that role or that mask that we're wearing, there's truthfully a lot of self-doubt that is seeding within us that we're afraid to face. And this doubt is ultimately what drives us to compete, to try harder, to be the best, because we think that if we can achieve all of these goals, that maybe all of you will notice us, that you'll see us, that you'll admire us for what we've accomplished. And this really comes out of our basic fear that we're not worth anything if we don't accomplish. That we don't really bring anything to the table if we're not hitting these goals or making our mark on the world. And so we falsely believe that love comes from achievement and status, and we're fundamentally unsure that we can be truly loved without what we do. And so we blur the lines between what it is to be admired and what it is to be loved. And so what does this look like as it relates to relationships? Gets rather complicated because we are usually very well connected in network. Like, we know how to work a room and go around, make everybody feel kind of special. And we can connect with all different types of people because one of the things about the three is we're not very in tune with our own emotions and our feelings, and so we're sort of like reaching out to you to try and feel something, to try and get a window into ourselves, because we're not really sure we can trust our own feelings by themselves. And so we have this sort of highly developed intuition when we walk into a space to be able to feel the energy in a room and know what needs to be said or done in order to make people feel included or like they're a part of something. That being said, intimacy is extremely difficult for the three. It's one of the reasons we keep relationships at a distance. We won't let you intrude into our lives too much. We'll kind of allow you to ask the questions to get to a certain point, but then we're going to sort of stop. We're going to keep it at the surface with you. Maybe you would describe a three as being sort of guarded emotionally. And our tendency is to either deny or completely avoid our own feelings and our own heart. Do you feel sad for us yet?
Hey everyone, excuse the interruption for a quick minute. My name is Kristen. I'm one of the team members here at Eastlake, and we're so glad that you're joining us today on the podcast. It's been so encouraging for us to hear stories from people all over the country and the world who are listening to these messages and resonating with this idea that we just keep saying over and over again, which is life is a gift and love is the point, and that we are all committed to being a beneficial presence in our own community. So thanks for joining us. I hope that that's resonating with you. It's just really fun for us. So wanted to also say thank you to those of you who contribute. This place, all of these things that we do are happening because of people who make consistent, even just small consistent gifts. It helps us plan. It helps us know that there are really people behind us who want this thing to continue. So thank you to those of you who do that. If you haven't had a chance to give yet, I would encourage you to maybe think about doing that if you find this beneficial in your own life. To make a contribution, it's really easy. You can go to eastlakecc.com, and there's a donate button there with all the info. So thanks so much for tuning in. Let's get back to the message.
Each of the Enneagram has wings. So these are the numbers that are to each side of your dominant type. So for a three, to one side, it's the two, and the other side, it's the four. So the three wing two, what that sort of looks like is the three wing two is the helper. And so I've noticed that I really take this on when I'm at work. Like, I become overly charming. I'm the one that's ready to just like step up and help anybody with anything. It can maybe feel somewhat fake to people, and they're maybe would have some questions or like, I don't know if I can really trust this person. But truthfully, we can become, of all the Enneagram types, as we wing to this too, so very deeply present socially and emotionally with the people that we're in relationship with. Now to the other side, the three wing four towards the individualist, this is where it gets extremely complicated for the three, because our drive for success and doing more and going faster and being the best gets complicated because there's this desire in us to know our true selves. And as I kind of reflect on my journey through starting a church, closing a church, and what's transpired after that, I really see that as so much of what my experience was. When I started my church in 2014, it was like Enneagram 3 on steroids. I mean, of all career choices, I think this idea of like starting your own business, your own organization, is it just speaks so powerfully to some of the inherent drive and motivations of the three. It's about setting these goals and then these like micro goals along the way to hit. And so you're constantly achieving and going, and you're going faster and faster to try and attain some really big achievement you're after. And then especially in the evangelical tradition, starting your own church is sort of the pinnacle of like all roles you can really take on. And I think that translates also into maybe if it's the tech world or other spaces that that's the reality. But if you do this in the evangelical tradition, you are celebrated, you're admired, you are known, you are noticed by so many groups of people. Ultimately, you become the one that is speaking at the conferences or writing the books, and everybody's coming to you for advice on how to do it and do it better and faster. And so you can sort of see how this role really lines up and syncs with the motivations of the three, this desire to be admired and to be known and seen. And so 2014, it culminates in us, our grand opening for this community. And so all this energy is placed into this. And we launch the thing. We birth this brand new community. And it's great. Things go really well. But then it gets complicated, this whole like winging to the fore for me, because as I reflect on my journey and I kind of look back at some of my my journal entries from that season, you can see this complication happening where it was like something wasn't really working, something was off. And I remember leaving that day after our grand opening, sort of expecting that this should be like, I did it, like amazing, I accomplished the goal. And so many people are sending me Facebook messages and Instagram likes and all the notes and the encouragement. People are admiring me for what I've accomplished. But I remember feeling more empty in that moment than any other time in my life and in my career. And so as I kind of look back, I realized that I was faced with this crossroads. It was, I could continue on the path towards admiration and goal setting and achieving and set whatever the next metric was gonna be and just start to keep like chasing it and get into that. Or I could enter a different path. I could go on an inward journey to try and discover what was really going on. Why was I feeling the way I felt? What was going on in my heart? And why was I feeling this unrest in my soul when everything pointed to I should be feeling the complete opposite? And come to find now, that was really the moment of me leaning in to these feelings that I really wanted to avoid for so long. And one of the most painful and frustrating things about being a three, I really like the way that Chris Hewitt says it, because when I first heard him share it in this way, it really hit me, and I actually felt something for once in my life. But the way he describes the three is that of all nine types, the three is the most disconnected from their own hearts, from their own feelings. And this is an extremely painful path for a three to have to walk down, because it takes you to have to explore your childhood wounds, to have to explore some of the painful parts of your life that you've been avoiding and sort of filling that void with some accomplishments and admiration, to really let go of that, to lean in. And so as kids, threes, we experience love through recognition, through being noticed. And because we sort of grew up so disconnected from our own hearts, we were seeking some kind of emotional connection to basically anything external and outside of ourselves, because we don't really know what we're feeling, or we don't really know if we can, like I said, we can trust what we feel. And so we're sort of attaching ourselves to these different external things, whether it's possessions, it's money, it's status, it's success, it's the next promotion. It's the people in our lives that sort of help us lean in to some of those emotions. We're like attaching, trying so hard to find a way to really feel what's going on in us. And so at a young age, we train ourselves in this way, or we are trained to chase love in all of the wrong ways. And I say it the whole, we were trained versus we train ourselves, because for me, the jury is still out on like nature versus nurture as it relates to the Enneagram. Because if I think about my childhood, I think maybe you would think of a three and think like, oh, you must have had the parents that were like, you better get the best grades and try harder in school and be the best athlete and like always be noticed. But I didn't really have that, like especially in school, like our motto at home was C's get degrees. And to which my partner Lindsay says, you are not allowed to tell our kids that. She's a one, so connect the dots there. But so it was like, I didn't really have my parents breathing down my neck saying like, you need to be the best in school. And then athletics, like the same kind of a thing. They were like, you can just kind of pick whatever you want to do, and weren't like the overbearing parents. Like I coach ice hockey now for my kids, and my word, I meet some parents and you're just like, please deal with your own ish. My word, your kids are gonna get so screwed up because you won't let them miss a practice and they need to be the best in the world and you think they're gonna make it to the pros. And it's like, sorry, the percentages are against you. Like, what? No way, my kid is the best one. And so it's like, I didn't really have that experience growing up. Like my parents weren't like that in athletics. But at the same time, I do recognize as I sort of like reflect on my threeness, these moments as a child where I can kind of see this. So growing up as a hockey player, one of the things every week I had a game on Sundays. And one of the things I looked forward to most was not even maybe like playing the game, but as you walked into the entrance of the facility, there would be this window that would show the stats of like all the best players. And for me, I like all week long, I was just waiting for the moment where I could go up and I could see how I measured up. Like how did I perform based on how everybody else is doing? And when I would be number one and two on that chart, like, it's like, I'm pretty amazing. And I'd get noticed for it. I'd be admired. Everybody knows who I am because I'm one of the best ones that's playing. And sort of this like addiction every single week, competing, trying to be the best one so I could be noticed. Or I think about when I was playing baseball, and I remember this moment where I had a coach tell me, we need to bump you up to play with the older kids because you're so good that you're not gonna get any better if you play with all these, you know, younger, like crappy players. And that feeling of like, wow, like these coaches noticed me. Now they all want me on their team. And it was like me stepping in and like chasing that feeling of like, oh, I just wanna continue to feel wanted and desired and get noticed for my accomplishments. And for the three, growing up, we really only saw ourselves through the lens of what everyone else thought about us. And I like the way that Ryan O'Neill of Sleeping Out Last, who wrote songs for each of the Enneagram types, he says it this way, I finally see myself through the eyes of no one else. It's so exhausting on the silver screen where I play the role of anyone but me. And so this ache developed in my heart as a child, and I've been trying to heal that through this addiction to achieving and being successful. So threes, we sort of lose ourselves in the recognition we get for our performance. And so the path forward towards wholeness, towards integration, is for us to slow down, to have some pace in life, to what Chris Hewitt says of engage solitude in a more meaningful way. And in that spiritual path, we make room for our true selves to emerge without the roles and the masks that we wear. And so I think for many of you, Eastlake has played a very powerful role in helping you sort of lean in. It's been the same for me, but honestly, it's been really complicated because the thing about this community is like, every time I walk in here, it's like a confrontation to everything Enneagram 3, right? So like thinking about the songs and the meditations, and it's like all this stuff about like your true self and like pay attention to your feelings and your heart and slow down and blah. It's like, it feels like, leave me alone for a minute. My word. Like, it's just like painful to walk in this space. Just like distract me with something shiny for at least 1 minute. That's all I ask, please, for the love. But truthfully, this community wakes me up. It helps me lean into this inward journey to discover my true self, to make space for who I really am, and to live from a place of health as a three so my gifts can be released. And for all of you threes, you know this about yourself. You are a gift, right? You know that about you. Like, I know. I'm the best of the Enneagram types, right? Like, you know that. Like, if you weren't here, nothing would get done. Some are going to say that we're too driven, we're too competitive, or too aspirational. Again, we need to just start responding with, you're welcome. You're welcome for this gift I give to you. Because the reality is, when a three can align their inherent drive and motivation to something that is beneficial to all and to the planet, like, something so powerful can emerge from that place. And they can use their energy for these unbelievable acts of courage and justice and inclusion. As they move up the ladder of power and privilege, they can sort of look at how they can use that to make true meaningful change on behalf of others who don't get those opportunities. And at our best, we have this ability to bring people along with us in this journey, that we can like cast a vision for this preferred future that everybody can get so excited about. And then we have this like emotional intuition to connect with so many different types of people and then include everyone to be a part of that journey together. So the question is, how do we allow the three to bring that gift forward? And how might you empathize with the experience of the three? It sort of makes me think about, does anybody have the Enya app? You use that? Okay, yeah, it's a great tool. And when we were first becoming Enneagram nuts, my partner Lindsay and I, we got this app, and there's a certain page that you go to that talks about how to get along with your particular number. So we got it out almost like in a joking way of like, let me read to you, Lindsay, all the one things that I can do to like cooperate with you and make space for you. And then she'll return the favor and do the same thing for me as a three. And so I'm like reading through for the one. I'm like, I will keep an orderly home for you. And I will make sure I follow through on all of my commitments, things like this. And then, you know, she's just kind of laughing, but at the same time, she's like, but really, you're gonna do those, right? Like, legit. That's what's happening. So then it turns around and she's going through all the things about the three. She's saying things like, I'll pat your ego for you because I know you need a little boost every once in a while. I won't interrupt you when you're working because that, for three, don't do that. That doesn't go well. That's like, you're going to get into a fight over that. And then down the list, and it's kind of like laughing, like, haha, this is so funny, this is so funny. And then it gets to the last one and it says, or she says, I will love you if you do nothing. And my laughter is like, but wait, really? You will? Because it like really spoke to me like in such a deep way where I was like, oh my gosh, but that, oh yeah, okay, you know. So it was like so powerful. So use that if you want to. But really, like, how do we empathize? How do we make space? How do we get along? One of the things that Lindsay has done for me is she's just attached this very short phrase to anything that's emotionally charged. That comes up for us. It's just when you're ready. So what I mean by that is, again, pointing out for the three, emotions are really hard. Actually, just right before this, Ryan, we were in the teacher's room back there. I was kind of looking through this, and he asked me the question, "How did you feel about that?" And I was like, "Oh, God, I don't know. Like, feel what? Like, it's truthfully, it's really hard for us to tap into our emotions and to kind of discover. And so, anytime something like that comes up, I should just say, I'm here whenever you're ready. And that speaks so powerfully to the three to create that kind of safe space to allow me to come forward when I'm ready to step in. Because I think about when we first got married, our tension point was always we'd get in a fight. And for her, it's like, we figure this out right now on the spot, and then we can deal with the conflict. And for me, I would need like 3 weeks to figure out, like, what do I even feel or what do I think? I don't know. I need to tap into my emotions. And I just didn't even know how to deal with that. So now to think of the progression to now we're at this place where it's like she recognizes this about me, that it's not I'm trying to distance myself on purpose. It's that I genuinely, I don't know what I feel. And it takes me more time to get there to experience it. The other thing for the three that can be helpful in their journey is just help us take some time for ourselves. And not just time to, distract ourselves with things or necessarily just like be alone, but to really engage solitude, like make permission and kind of remind us of a deeper journey that we can go on to discover our true selves. Because threes, we will not naturally do it. It's just not something that comes up. We get lost in our work, in our achievements, and the things that we want to try and accomplish. And so we always are trying to find ways to avoid that journey and just need a little bit of permission and a little bit of encouragement along the way. So as I close, I invite you to stand if you're able. And I want to read this quote from a book I've been reading lately by a guy named Stephen Murphy Shigematsu. Because I really feel like he sums up the path towards wholeness and integration for the three. So let me read this. I started to see the true self as myself at birth, who I was born to be. If I was able to simply be who I am, I could grow into my potential. I saw that my mission, and indeed everyone's, was to live into my true self. And that this is done not by comparing ourselves to others, but by accepting who we truly are. We each have a part to play, a purpose that no one else can fulfill. We are needed as we are. Like every person, we are incomparably unique. When we feel self-acceptance and appreciation for who we truly are, we feel alive, sensing our purpose, doing what needs to be done, and leading a full and meaningful life. Have a fabulous week. Thanks for being here.